So please welcome Michael Kaplan.
Can I get my three dings right now?
This is not a story. This is more like an oral charm bracelet. I've got five small moments that I'm going to put on a string, and hopefully it will seem like jewelry. Family legend number one. When I was 4 years old, I recited the names of all the American presidents. And this act of precocity was topped off by my mispronouncing Herbert Hoover and saying Sherbert Hoover. Now, I have no memory of this. My mother and father and my older sister and a couple of dazzled cousins insist that it happened, but what's always been missing for me is the origin story. You know, I don't know if I sat bolt upright in my booster chair and started channeling some historian on his deathbed 500 miles away, but I expect that there was the back of a cereal box involved. One that had all the pictures of the presidents and that I probably had my mother tell me over and over who they all were, and then one morning I regurgitated all the data. And what I can picture, you know, even though I don't remember any of it, is my mother, who was prone to depression and prone to distraction and really just prone to that free-floating malaise of, oh God, is this really my life? Turning and looking at me with amazement and sitting down at the table, thoroughly engaged. And in that moment, I realized that if I could come up with performances like this, she would never let me starve. And that was very useful information to have at 4 years old. Family legend number two. When I was five, at bedtime, my father would not read to me. I would dictate to him story ideas for the Dick Tracy cartoon show. And he would write them down, and apparently he even sent them in once to the show. Again, I don't remember any of this. Maybe in like the box of childhood archives, there's a very gentle rejection letter from the ABC network. Yeah, I'm sure that played really well with a room full of writers. You know, my five-year-old came up with these. I'm sure you could use them. But again, what I think about is that this was a Scheherazade trick by a little boy who was afraid of the dark. And if I could keep my father there as I regaled him with stories about Flat Top and Prune Face and the Mole, then I wouldn't be left in the dark to be eaten by monsters. So at a very early age, I had just figured out the basic survival skill that if I could come up with these moments of verbal dexterity or these bursts of creativity, that I would get the attention and the acknowledgement and the affection that would keep me alive. And that, again, was great to know. But the growing pains began when I discovered that I was operating in a competitive market. And I'll explain. When I was nine, it's my mother's birthday, and so I come up with the handmade card, like I always do, with something funny that I write in there, because it's established I'm the word guy in the family. My older sister, she's the artist. She's very skilled with pen and ink. My younger sister, you know, she can choose between music or clay. She hasn't figured it out yet. And so I kind of, you know, phone in a card. I've got it ready. And my sister has made this really lovely picture of a sunrise. And then in immaculate calligraphy, she has, love you forever and forever. Love you with all my heart. Love you whenever we're together. Love you when we're apart. And I experienced several levels of betrayal. First, I can see in my mother's expression that my sister's stock has shot up, and that if there is an imminent Sophie's Choice moment, I'm screwed. But also, I'm the word guy. I mean, what is with this immaculate couplet? I feel absolutely betrayed. And in the years that followed, I am like overachieving. Anytime my parents have a birthday or an anniversary, I'm writing a song, I'm writing a short play, I'm giving them a bound booklet. It wasn't until my senior year in college that I heard all of the White Album. And then I realized that my sister had stolen from Paul McCartney and hadn't even given him credit on the card. But I realized that I was battling in this competitive world for attention, and that my own sister would rip off a beetle just to step on my neck and rise up in the family hierarchy, and that soon I discovered that this level of competition was going on all around me. And that brings me now to fifth grade. We've been studying poetry, and the assignment was to write sort of a longish poem. My favorite was The Highwayman by Alfred Noyes. The highwayman came riding, 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 riding. The highwayman came riding up to the old inn door. And I sort of took that and grafted on The Midnight Ride of Paul Revere by Oliver Wendell Holmes. No, who wrote that? Longfellow? Yeah, maybe so. And so it became Paul Revere went riding, 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 you know, and it was clearly derivative, and nobody was giving me credit for having come up with a mashup decades earlier. Eric Fink came up with a poem that started, I climbed a tree, I climbed it high, I climbed it right up to the sky, and when I looked down to the ground, I felt my heart pound. Everybody thought that was the best poem. He might have been stealing from Paul McCartney as well, because I never listened to the early solo albums, but that was the front runner. And suddenly we are having open house for the parents, and the two best artists in the class have been commissioned to make this enormous poster of a tree, little boy in a tree, and Eric Fink's poem on the poster. And I am thrown into a panic. I mean, my parents are going to come to open house, and I've got nothing. And Eric Fink is on the big wall. And so I go into a fury of productivity. And long before J.K. Rowling ever came up with the Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them, I created Kaplan's Collection of Creatures, all with a K. And it was a booklet. Every page had a hastily drawn picture, a hastily named monster, and corresponding verse that I can only describe as desperate acts of poetry. And I know you want to hear one.
Yes.
The froggy frope, what a dope, he likes to eat bits of rope. The froggy frope, the frope froggy, he likes to breathe air that's smoggy. Clearly a tragic fall from the glory from the glory days of Sherbert Hoover. And I presented this book to Mrs. Romaine, my teacher, and she looked completely befuddled, but agreed to put it on a table at the open house, where it was rightfully ignored by everyone except somebody's sister, who picked it up, flipped through a few pages, and went, ah, cute, and put it back down. Poetry was not my game. I had to realize that. So in sixth grade, I cultivated class clown status. And I got loud, and I got sarcastic, and that worked really well. And I was getting all the other students to laugh all the time. I was getting attention and acknowledgement. Wasn't that sure about affection, but I thought, this is the formula. I'm going to work it. And like 2 weeks before school was over, and this was going to be the end of our entire elementary school careers, all the boys and girls started pairing off in this prepubescent, asexual way that they called going steady. And what would happen is a boy would ask a girl, do you want to go steady? And she'd say yes. And then they really wouldn't know what to do, because this was, you know, years before the internet, and no one had a clue. And so Eric Fink and Amy Gantman quickly became like the Uber couple in sixth grade. They were going steady. They were convincing everybody else that they should do that. And it wasn't long before I was surrounded by several of these couples wanting to know, are you going to ask Molly Salyard to go steady? Now, I liked Molly Salyard. I really liked it when I made her laugh. It gave me this fabulous fizzy feeling inside. But as much as I liked her, that wasn't going to compensate for how much I hated the idea of rejection and how much of a risk that was going to be. And I asked, well, does she like me? Hoping that somebody would produce her diary with a page that said, I like Mike Kaplan. But Amy Gantman said, she says she likes your jokes. And according to the formula of survival, that should have been enough. But I said, well, then let her go steady with my jokes. And they all laughed like I was making a sarcastic bon mot, but no, I walked away at that point from the situation. And that, you know, that should have been an uplifting moment, but a growth spurt during growing pains doesn't make anything feel better. You know, what it does is it opens up a window to more doubt and more questions. And in this case, it was the question of, well, who's going to want to go steady with me for me? And those would be the growing pains for the next 40 years of my life. Thank you.